everybody. Welcome to another episode of Two Strike Noise, your weekly baseball history podcast. My name's Jeff. I'm one half of the show. Joining me, as usual, not in person this week, which is shocking, but it is Mark A. Johnston. Mark, how you doing?
Hi, this is actually the virtual Mark, and Mark couldn't actually be here.
Little do listeners know that we have the technology with the program I use to edit that we do have actual AI voices of the two of us. So if one of us says something stupid or we forget something, I can just type it in and then AI Jeff or AI Mark will say it. So you could be AI. Nobody's going to know.
No one will.
Oh, shoot. I got to reboot. Everyone hold on.
Okay. Yeah, no, we're working again. Okay, good. Good news.
All right. Well, it is time for, my gosh, what show 249. I guess that makes next week's episode a pretty big one. 250 shows.
We better be really prepared for that one. I mean,
why start now?
We're barely prepared normally, but maybe we should prepare for one.
Yeah, 250 shows. Wow. But you know, we got to get through show 249 before we can get too excited about
that. This is true.
So let's get right into our BP segment. This is going to be a Tales from the Dugout episode, which means that we've got a bunch of shorter stories that aren't, you know, it's more like BP for the whole time. Just not long enough stories to do a full segment about. But before we do that, we've got the super short ones first. That is what is known as BP. So let's get right into it. Mark, last week we talked about the beekeeper in Arizona getting his own Topps card, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I think we also mentioned that it was dollar dog night at the Mets and they were crazy about that. But what I noticed is that Topps also gave hot dogs their own card from that night at City Field.
They got their own card?
They got their own card. So it seems like a pretty low bar to get a Topps card these days.
Man, I guess so. You would think for the Allen & Ginter set, maybe they'd make a two-strike noise card.
Oh, they should. I mean, if they want to move some cards, yeah. But, I mean, the beekeeper, great. I think that's great. That's fun. It made national news. But hot dog night, I mean, they hadn't had one for a while. But hot dog night, you can give them a card?
The Mariners had hot dogs from heaven, and they could have done that.
Is that where they had a helicopter and they dropped hot dogs down on the
stand? I don't think it was a helicopter, but it was, they threw hot dogs with parachutes all over the stadium, and not all of them floated down quietly. Okay. The occasional, some of them just kind of fell in upon themselves and just plummeted.
Yeah.
I wanted to use the word plummeted.
That was my mistake. That was turkeys were being dropped from a helicopter.
Yeah,
that
I was getting. In Cincinnati.
Yeah, I was. Speaking of hot dog, a story came out in the Washington Post. I don't know. Okay, if the bar is low for Topps, getting a Topps card, what is the Washington Post doing when they are ranking the cost of hot dogs across Major League Baseball stadiums?
Yeah, that's interesting.
But you'll never guess where the most expensive hot dog is.
The most expensive hot dog. I'm going to go with Fenway.
You'd be wrong. It is none other than here at the Oakland Coliseum.
No kidding.
Yeah, well, of course there are. I guess they have, there's not enough people there, so they got to really jack up the price so that they can break even. I don't know. It's Aramark. Now, we're not going to pile on John Fisher because he's big enough. We're not going to pile on John Fisher anymore. Everybody already knows he's worthless, but this is Aramark or whoever is, doing the food there. So we can't get on them. But speaking of the Oakland Coliseum and trade rumors swirling around A's rookie Mason Miller, he played last year, but I think he's still a rookie. The best closer in baseball at this point. And of course, they're already trying to trade him. But remember the last no-hitter that Mike Fiers threw? He's thrown, is it two or maybe even three? But his last one was with the A's. It was against the Red Sox, I believe. And it was here in Oakland. This was actually the year that I went to 58 home games, and this was one game I did not go to. But yeah, that game was delayed like an hour. The start was because the lights went out and they couldn't get him back on.
Oh, wow.
And Mason Miller, you know how closers have a lot of them have entrance. It's like wrestling.
Yes.
They have, and a lot of stadiums have LED lights.
Yes.
So they can change colors. They can come off and on really quick. They're very responsive. But Mason Miller cannot have an intro like that. here at the Coliseum. And that is because the A's do not have LED lights. And if they turned the lights out, they're not sure they could get them back on again.
Yeah, I guess it's more than just flipping a switch.
Well, it's flipping a switch, but the lights like the A's have take a while. They come on and they have to like fire up. And these are so old that they don't really do that. So, I mean, wow. I understand. I mean, at Turner Field, when I was working in Atlanta, there were several times where the lights went out. And it would take even those, which was a newer stadium at the time, those still took a while to come back on, if they did. So,
well, they couldn't play them a theme song, right? They have at least a CD player or vinyl.
Oh, they just Bluetooth somebody's phone.
Oh, well, no, you know, as long as they can give them a theme of some kind.
Yeah, that's obviously not. And this reminded me of the band Five. Do you remember this song? When the lights go out, I'm not gonna lie, I like this song. For some reason, I thought it was H-Town that did this, but no, it's
Jeff,
Five.
I think you're a closeted DJ. you do like to play the music.
Well, I just gotta keep things different here. Let's see. So the Houston Astros, let's talk about your Houston Astros.
Okay.
They're not off to a great start, right?
No, they're off to a bit of a slow start. And I mean, is it still a start? We're heading almost, you know, we're downhill towards June.
Well, somebody on social media said this about their start. Judging by their record, I'd say the Astros have stopped cheating.
Yeah, well, you know what? Sometimes you got to change your ways, and it doesn't always equate into things getting better.
Oh, boy, Mark, it's time for another J.J. Hardy story.
Good.
We're in danger of being called a J.J. Hardy podcast.
Along with whiskey and
Red Sox. Yeah. Well, I'm just kidding. Cause actually I think this is the first time mentioning JJ Hardy, but I'm not sure that many others are mentioning him at all. So we're kind of the de facto JJ Hardy podcast leader. I think
we are.
Anyways, yeah. He's living in my old town of Chandler, Arizona, and he's gone and made his neighbors mad at him.
Uh-oh.
He is in the process of building a baseball diamond in his backyard, complete with a 20-foot high backstop and lights.
Wow.
Yeah.
We got to go visit.
One of his neighbors described it as, quote, like living next to Topgolf, end quote. So I saw pictures of this. Somebody sent a drone up and took some pictures. At least, you know, home plate is facing his own house and not his neighbor's, which is, I mean, that's polite. So if he hits a long ball.
Right.
It's going to break his windows and not somebody else's.
Yeah, no, that was nice of him.
He also has a tennis court and a putting green already installed. So this sounds like a great party house. I agree with you. Maybe we need to.
Man, no kidding. Does he have a pool?
I think by law you have to in Arizona.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he has a pool and a pond.
Yeah.
The pond would be good for you. It's a natural spring.
Oh, good.
See if anybody picks up that reference.
Well, that's good because I didn't. So as the leaders in the J.J. Hardy podcasting world, I feel like we should have an open invite to this place.
But you know, I'm surprised he hasn't gotten back to us yet.
J.J. Hardy did not. He refused comment. He didn't refuse. He just didn't. He said, I'm not going to comment to the reporters here. We haven't heard back from him because we've reached out to him, but we will keep you updated with any new updates.
Let's see if we can get a hold of him. I want to go.
I had a thought. This was it was too late for our 420 show. But I had a thought.
Deep well, that's thoughts. Good.
What if players had the option of having letters instead of just numbers on the back of their jerseys?
Hmm.
So instead, you could even put your initials there or a combo of both. Like, remember Benito Santiago, he was number 09 for the Padres and the Marlins, but he could have been like 09. Or somebody could be L8, late.
Maybe Adam Ottavino, maybe that's an O. Not a zero.
But I mean, the Yankees are going to have to do this at some point, right? Because they're going to retire everything else.
One through 99 will be retired within the next 6 years.
Well, yeah, what 11 through 98, right? Because Judge is going to be 99 is going to be retired when he's done. Yeah. And they've already got through 10 at least. I don't know. I mean, I do you go up to triple digits or do you start using numbers?
Triple digits would be so odd.
They do it in Japan. They do it in Japan where in the minor leagues, you Like if I'm number 12, which is the jersey number I always wear, when I'm in the minors, I might be 112 or 212. And then when I graduate into, you know, as long as nobody else is wearing it in the big club, I become 12.
So you could be like number 437.
I don't think they go that deep, but I think it depends on
that
what.
That would be kind of cool if you were number 437.
Well, if you're wearing that on the Tampa Bay Rays City Connect jerseys, you'd never be able to tell because you can't read their numbers.
That's a good point.
Oh, those are awful. Let's see. Another thing here. Rule change. We didn't do a rule change. Usually we talk about rule changes before the season.
We didn't do that.
Let's see. There was one. Well, there were multiple, but there was one this year that actually addressed one of my pet peeves, which I was shocked that they did. And that is about the baseline to first base being in fair territory. But if you run directly in the first baseline in a straight line and get hit by the throw, you're ruled out. Which doesn't make sense. Well, they widened the lane, not physically, but they just said the runner will now be deemed in compliance with the rule as long as both feet remain on the dirt path between first and home.
Are the dirt paths uniform?
I don't believe they are.
Okay.
But I'm all for this. I think this is great. They listened to one of my ideas. Now, my day one as commissioner, my first edict will now be that, because that was going to be my first thing. Now my first thing will be to strip John Fisher of ownership of the A's and put him in a Turkish prison.
Well, you know, they listened to you before.
Yeah. My second thing, home plate umpires not allowed to call check swings. They have to ask first or third base umps.
Okay. That's fair enough.
That really upsets me. Not home as much as John Fisher.
But are going to be obsolete soon anyway.
But on check swings? I don't know. I mean,
no, not on check swings. Yeah. I saw a conspiracy theory that umpires are intentionally calling things worse this year to make the robo umps more palatable for the fans. So we'll want
that's them. Why Angel Hernandez got the pay bump. Okay. All right. You know what? I was just doing some other stuff on the internet, and Joel Zumaia, or maybe it was Immaculate Grid time, and I pulled up Joel Zumaia's baseball reference page. Now, Joel is kind of... he's a punchline, right? Because of the whole rock band hurt himself, couldn't pitch because he was playing video games and stuff like that. But
yes,
in 2006, his first year in the big leagues, he went 6-3 in 62 games with a 1.94 ERA, 83 innings pitched, 56 hits, 97 strikeouts.
Not bad.
ERA plus of 233. I mean, this guy was Mason Miller, just blowing straight gas. And it just, a 3.2 war for a middle reliever, a setup guy. He had one save. 3.2 war.
Wow.
I mean, that is incredible. And then from there, it just went straight downhill, which is a shame. Because, I mean, those are incredible numbers.
Yeah, not bad at all.
But I just thought we'd remember Joel Zumaia. Somebody else I came across, I've never heard of this guy. I'm guessing most people haven't. He only played for 3 years in the big leagues, and that was in the Negro Leagues, and that was in 27-28, as in 19, and 19-35. So he had a little bit of a break there. I think he went and was playing in Mexico and in Cuba, because he is Cuban. His name is Manuel Garcia, but everybody knew him as Cocaina Garcia.
Cocaina Garcia
from Cuba. And he was called this because his pitches would, quote, make batters seem drugged and be unable to concentrate or focus on the baseball.
Nice.
Which I don't think that's really what cocaine does, right? Doesn't it sharpen your focus? Maybe not like Adderall, but I don't know. I don't know either. I have no experience with cocaina myself, but I do like to say cocaina. I'm not going to lie. Well,
I'm just checking the Encyclopedia of Negro League Baseball. He's in here. He was New York Cubans and Cuban Stars from 26 to 36. Very interesting.
Well, Baseball Reference does not list him that much, but interesting name. And
he's a member of the Cuban and Venezuelan Baseball Hall of Fame.
Refer to him as cocaina or...
It says Manuel Garcia, and then in quotes, cocaina. That is fun to say.
I know, right? Cocaina. All right. We talked about Brad Leslie last week, and I was unaware of this, but our friend Daniel Horeen reached out to us. He is the incredibly talented artist. We've had him on before that does these comic book covers every week, and they're limited edition. I've got several of them here in my office, and he did a Brad Leslie cover a while ago.
He did, yes.
I'm sure I saw it because I get the emails every Sunday of what's coming up. Yes. And I didn't know who it was. Or maybe that's what pushed me into looking up Brad Leslie. But after what we learned about Brad last week and knowing that he's got a Pop Fly Art cover, is he on track to become a patron saint of Two Strike Noise?
I think he's at least nominated.
Yeah, I think he's got to be up for it, right? And then they do the smoke for saints, or is that just for the Pope?
That's just for the Pope.
Okay. Well, I think one of the litmus tests for patron sainthood of Two Strike Noise is, would they fit in with the Savannah Bananas?
Okay.
And I think Brad Leslie definitely would, right?
I think he's a strong fit for the Bananas.
Yeah. Let's see. Mark, this weekend is Mother's Day.
Yes.
So that means we're going to have to suffer through a bunch of pink bats and pink hats and all that kind of stuff. But yeah. This is non-baseball related, but my God, I just love this song. Because whenever you get a chance to have Mr. T rap on your podcast, you take it.
Mother, there is no other like mother, so treat her right. Mother, I always love her, my mother, so treat her right. Treat her right. If it's for the moan and the miserable groan from the pain that she felt when I was born. Oh, it's for the oven with its burning heat where she stood making sure I had something to eat. Tea is for the time that she stayed up nights and took my temperature when I wasn't.
So, I love this.
Yeah, those are some deep lyrics. Let me
and
tell you.
The fact that he's like looking at a cue card the whole time to read this is the
best. Yeah, that can't be easy to memorize. I mean, come on.
There are a total of like 17 words in the entire song. Yeah. But if you want more of that, we'll play that out. That'll be our at the end of that podcast, we'll play
out. Nice beat. Yeah,
something. Let's see, Mark, this show is debuting on May 10th.
Yes.
Manager alert. If you did not get enough manager notes from Wax Pax Heroes last week, which if you didn't, there's something wrong with you.
You shouldn't need more manager notes than what we provided in Wax Pax Heroes.
Definitely not. But two future managers made their debuts today during different years. Future managers Tony La Russa and Jeff Torborg both made their debuts today as players in 1963 and 64, respectively.
Oh, nice.
Surprisingly enough, I don't believe either of those were the managers we pulled last week. A lot of other names that we know about that made their debuts today, but nobody really outstanding except for Willie McGee, one of our favorites. Let's see, Willie McGee, Barria native, by the way, Oakland, still lives around here. Debuted in 82 for the Cardinals. Things I like about Willie McGee. First of all, 1984, it was almost the Willie McGee game against the Cubs because Willie McGee hit for the cycle on the NBC game of the week. But then Ryan Sandbagged him
and
had that incredible game. Also, I like he was named MVP in 1985, led the league in hits with 216, led the league in triples with 18, and led the league in batting average with .353 batting average. He also led the league in 1987 in double plays grounded into. What happened to Willie that year?
He was hitting the ball sharply just right at the shortstop.
My theory is he was only playing with one leg that year.
That's possible.
Because he was so fast. How is he hitting into that many double plays? Also had a very strong stirrup game. Very strong. He posted
this is true.
He always wore, especially in the 80s, he always wore stirrups. Like he and Vince Coleman would pull those things up. So that stirrup was just like a thread. And he posted on one of his social medias a picture of him in high school. And I didn't think you could pull stirrups up any higher than he did, but he did in high school. I don't know. It's something. Speaking of the Cardinals, not debut related, but have you seen the shortstop for the Cardinals, Mason Wynn?
Yes.
This guy's arm is absolutely incredible. like Sean Dunstan is jealous of this guy's arm.
Yeah, it's impressive. If you haven't seen it, there's plenty of YouTube videos.
Yeah, and I mean, just watch him turn a double play, because that throw from second base, if you blink, you will miss it. And he is nailing people that have no business being thrown out at first base. But his arm, his middle name also is Blaze. So nice. I want to know,
he's a superhero.
Well, how are there two players in Major League Baseball right now that are named Blaze? We don't have kids, neither you nor I nor us together. So we haven't looked into kids' names. But why are there so many millennials or Gen Zs naming their kids Blaze? I don't get it. Yeah, but maybe, I'm neither a millennial nor Gen
Ghost Z. Rider fans. I don't know.
Oh, wow. Ghost Rider, PBS sponsorship incoming. Nice. All right. Well, that's going to do it for the debuts. That'll do it for our BP segment. Mark, let's get into this. It's Tales from the Dugout Show. Like I said, episode number 249. Some shorter stories that we don't have as much to talk about. But why don't you go first and hit us with one of yours?
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about Brian Cole, pro outfielder, minor league baseball, Mets organization. He was one of the most solid athletes that I've seen as far as numbers and all around talent. In high school, he threw 22 touchdowns his senior year, and he got offers to play college football from a bunch of Division I schools. But like you and I, Jeff, he chose baseball.
Nice.
And the Tigers selected him in 97. He turned down the $5,000 offer and went to Navarro College instead. Now, he had a pretty good year the one year he played at Navarro. This is in 60 games, mind you, okay? Keep this in mind. He hit .524 with 27 home runs, 82 RBI, and 95 runs scored. And you'll like this, 49 stolen bases in 60 games.
Jeez. How many walks and how many intentional walks?
I don't know, and I don't know. And I don't have those numbers.
Wow. Navarro College, where is that?
That is a heck of a question. Let's see.
I feel like I've heard that.
Is a public community college in Texas.
That's right, because I believe they are either in the Last Chance U universe or the whatever that cheerleading documentary is on Netflix. That one of those two, I guarantee you, Navarro, that's how I know that name. And it's a JC, right?
Yeah, he was named Baseball America's JC Player of the Year, actually, which makes sense, hitting .524, you know. He was drafted by the Mets. He did sign that year. He was drafted in the 18th round. He debuted for the Kingsport Mets. After 56 games, he was so good, he was promoted to Pittsfield. Only played a couple games, but that season, he had a pretty good year. And then in 99, he played for the Capital City Bombers, where he hit .316 with a .362 on base.
The Capital City Bombers, aren't they the rivals of the Springfield Isotopes?
I believe so, yeah.
Dancing Homer went and challenged the mascot, I think, or something like
that. Right, I believe so, yeah. He had 18 home runs, 71 RBI, 50 stolen bases. You know, got highly ranked as a prospect. With St. Lucie the next season, he hit .312, 15 home runs, 54 stolen bases in 91 games, and was promoted to double A. He's still only 20 at this point. And he didn't do well at double A at first. His first 59 at bats, he only hit .136. Something clicked. And then his next 117 at bats, he hit .350. So overall, .301, 19 home runs, 86 RBI, 69 stolen bases. The guy's just absolute hitter and athlete all over. He was the Mets Minor League Player of the Year and highly ranked by Baseball America, and was invited to spring training with the Mets the next season. Here's where it gets very sad. In 2001, he was driving to his parents' home from spring training in Port St. Lucie, and he lost control of his vehicle, rolled numerous times, flipped over. He was ejected from the car and unfortunately was pronounced dead on the scene. His cousin was in the car, but was wearing a seatbelt and did survive and avoided any serious injury. Now, here's something very interesting. In 2010, his family won a $131 million lawsuit against the Ford Motor Company, claiming that the Ford Explorer, which is what he was driving, is defective and unreasonably dangerous for the uses for which it was marketed because the vehicle has an unreasonable tendency to roll when used as Ford marketed it to be used, which was as a station wagon replacement. It was, they won their lawsuit and $131 million, and it kind of changed the way that Ford made the Explorer and marketed the Explorer as well. But I wanted, I thought those numbers were so impressive, and what could have been with this guy. He, you know, as far as power, defense, obviously hitting for average, and then all those stolen bases, man. What could have been with this guy? It's super sad. And I know I'm known for my sad baseball stories, but I just wanted to give Brian Cole a shout out because I didn't want him to be forgotten.
What years were this? When did he play in the minor leagues?
He was in the minors from 98 to 2000.
I don't remember this. I mean, I'm sure it made news.
Right. Yeah. He died in the accident at 22. And what a talent this guy was. Everywhere he went, he got better and better. And just all around five-tool player. Sad story, but I didn't want that to go forgotten just because he was such a amazing player when he did play.
Well, I'm going to try and not be as depressing. We'll try and do a little bit. We're going to lift you up now.
Okay, yes. My next one is much more positive.
All right. Well, I want to talk about Rod Murphy for a minute. Which I think is a sentence that has never been uttered on a podcast anywhere before.
First time for everything.
Okay, this is a little inside business. Everybody, if you've listened to the show, you know that I do video screens for stadiums and arenas. There is an actual professional sports team. I'm not going to tell you what sport that we are talking to right now that still refers to their screens as Jumbotrons.
No,
this is a professional sports team. But I'm going to put this up on our Diamond Vision. There's a name of an actual product that still exists. Mark, so you can see this here. It's Rod Murphy's 1990 upper deck card, reliever for the Red Sox here. We did a whole episode on Glenn Hubbard holding a snake, so we can talk about Rod Murphy and one of his baseball cards as well. He's a left-handed pitcher, Boston Red Sox. Pictured in this card, sitting on the top step of the visitor's dugout at the Big A in Anaheim. And he's there for a photo shoot for PC Laptop Computer Magazine. So why exactly was Rod Murphy being sought out by PCLLCM, as I like to call it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Very well known. Back in high school, Rod took a computer class where his final project, what he did is he wrote a program that handicapped horses, racing horses. He was always interested in this. His family was always interested in it. This is back in 1978, though. So he probably had to save his program on a cassette tape. Like, that wasn't even floppy disk. It's cassettes.
Dating myself, but yeah, I used to do that.
The first computer class I ever took, we saved it on a cassette. Rod knew computers and he knew horses. His program correctly predicted the Kentucky Derby outcome. He predicted that Affirmed would win, Alidat would finish second, and Believe It, if you believe it, was third. He got an A, 100% correct. During his time in the minor leagues, he had a lot of free time, not having to check social media and keep up with diss tracks. He entered all 13,000 pages of a book that listed every American racehorse.
Wow.
And from that, his program came up with the name of a horse that he could buy that would be successful, according to his program. So he went in with some friends, got the horse. It placed first or second in 7 of its first 8 races. So clearly, dude knows what he's doing, but he was not the majority owner, so he didn't have the final say, and they kept running this horse, and it got injured. Once Murph made it to the majors, though, he was good. He broke in with the Reds, where he pitched for 4 seasons. He had a 14-11 record with a 2.6 ERA over those first 4 seasons. That's good for a 151 ERA plus. You know, not quite Joel Zamaya numbers.
No, but
very good. Yeah, left-handed middle reliever. Everyone's always going to want these guys. Yeah, he was traded along with the assassin, Nick Asaski, to the Red Sox in 1989. Murphy had also created another program on his computers, probably an MS-DOS at this point, where he tracked batters he faced. He was tracking batters like 20 years before anybody else did it and thought it was cool. So PCLCM wanted to highlight him. They'd found out about him. And to do this, they gave Rod this state-of-the-art 20-pound slab of concrete with like 20 megs of hard drive space.
It's a laptop by definition.
Yeah. Well, it takes up more than your entire lap, but I don't even think it had enough memory to like save an emoji at this point. But
no.
Murphy actually made a joke about it. He said that the processor was 4.75 hertz, not mega or gigahertz, just hertz. Yeah. I think he was whelmed with the specs.
Yes, definitely whelmed.
But he said this thing cost like $5,000 or $6,000 at the time, and PC LCM presented it to him. Like maybe they didn't pay him for the photo shoot. They gave him this laptop. It was state of the art at that point. So while he is there posing with the photographer that the magazine hired, there was an upper deck photographer there. And so he takes advantage of the opportunity and snaps some pictures of his own, and bang, it becomes his card. Now, if I am PCLCM, who paid for that photo session, and Upper Deck comes along and just snaps their own picture and uses it on their card, I'm pretty pissed.
Yeah.
I wonder if they sued them, or if they, maybe they worked out an agreement. I don't know. But according to Rod's Wikipedia page, so you know it's quite possibly partly mostly true-ish coming from Wikipedia. After retiring, he continued with his handicapping and got into breeding and racing horses even more. And he's owned several winning horses. And here are some of their names: Platinum Tierra, Swing and Miss, Diamond Studs, Strike Three, and Golden Spikes. I feel like we've had him in Wax Packs Heroes, because now that I read these out loud, I feel like we've talked about these horse names.
That's
before.
Come up before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a theme with these names, but I'm having a hard time putting my finger on it.
Yeah,
but
I don't know. It's Snacks or something?
Yeah, it's probably. I don't know. But yeah, I swear, we have pulled him, and we do pull Wikipedia up when we're doing Wax Pack. We must have done this before, because those names are definitely familiar.
Yeah, we talked about horse names at some point. Someday we'll have a horse named Two Strike Noise.
Yeah, I'm sure that one will never make it to the Blue Factory.
There's got to be somebody in horse racing that listens to the show. Well, maybe not.
There's got to be somebody that listens to the show. No, there's not.
There may not be.
All right, Mark, what do you got?
From the depressing to the bizarre teen, I want to talk about a really weird minor league baseball game that happened in the California League in Stockton.
The Ports.
Stockton. Yes, the Ports, exactly. And the visiting team was the Lake Elsinore Storm. It was an interesting game. There was a lot of comebacks, position players pitching, and a fan ejected from the game.
Oh, I know that fan.
You do?
Yeah, but it was right field Will.
It was right field Will, the ballpark junkie.
Yep.
Yes, this was a 17-inning game. The Ports ended up winning 11-9, but it's kind of interesting because at the end of the ninth inning, to go into extras, it was 6-6. And Lake Elsinore scored 2 runs in the 13th, to which the Ports responded with their own 2 runs. So it was 8-8 at the end of the 13th. And Lake Elsinore scored a run in the 16th, to which the Ports responded with a run of their own. So it was 9-9 at the end of the 16th inning. Finally, the game was won by Wade Kirkland, who hit a home run. It was his first at bat of the game.
They're saving players till this point in the game.
Well, he was a shortstop, and they put him in a pitch. So he hit a home run, won the game, and made himself the winning pitcher as well. He went 1-0 that year and played shortstop the overwhelming majority of the time.
That his only home run of the season?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know. But kind of funny, the Ports numbers 8 and 9 hitters combined for an 0-14. So it was a little rough there. Dusty Robinson, the Ports right fielder, was their 9 hitter. And he struck out 7 times. I'm not even sure what you call that. Because, I mean, four strikeouts is the Golden Sombrero. 5, I don't know. What do you call that? I've heard it called the Platinum Sombrero. I've heard it called winning the lotto. Because, 5K.
And then 6 is the horn of plenty.
Yeah, but 7.
Yeah.
Dusty Robinson.
I think you start over again. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we should come up with what that's called, the seven strikeout game. Yeah, Will McNeil, the guy that was tossed, his offense was yelling terrible strike zone followed by a derogatory term for a little person.
So that's right field Will McNeil. He is he has had season tickets to the A's in right field forever. He is very active on social media, and he actually, with the Stockton Ports, I know he goes to their games quite often. He does the PA for them now sometimes.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah, well, the umpire didn't like the name.
And, well, pretty and thin Will said skin,
it was kind of funny
it.
Because he's only 5'7".
Yes, he is a very small person.
Yeah. So the umpire tossed him out of the game. But like I said, he was crouched behind a merchandise kiosk to watch the rest of the game.
Doesn't surprise me. Dude is crazy about baseball.
And so he did get to see Kirkland earn himself a win with his walk-off home run. Crazy game. Wish I could have been there for that.
Do you have
one.
A time I'm, of the length? How long did this game take to play?
I have no idea.
I asked the tough questions here.
Man, I guess.
Was that his only home run? How long was the game?
Yeah, where did he go to school? What round was he drafted in? I don't know. All I know is that was a crazy game, and I wanted to share that with our listeners.
All right. Mark, that's going to do it. We're going to wrap it up. We've got some other stuff, but we can save that for the next Tales episode, because what we've got to do, we're going to get into Wax Packs Heroes, because we've got a special Wax Packs Heroes. We've got some cards that were sent to us from a listener. So we're excited to do this. So let's go ahead. We're going to play the theme, and then we're going to open up some baseball cards. Wax Pack Heroes! All right, this is Wax Packs Heroes. Let's go over the rules here first before we get into what cards we're looking at here. If you have not joined us before, what we're going to do, we're going to open up some Wax Packs, in this case, some that a listener has sent to us, and we are going to take the baseball reference war of the year of the card, and we're going to add those up. We're going to play head-to-head, card-to-card. Whoever wins each round, first 1-5 is the victor of the game. Right now on the scoreboard, Mark, you are up 2-0 as we start the new season. I'm a slow starter this year. A couple of things can add or subtract to that war that we are looking at. Any 80s baseball aesthetics, which this is kind of flexible. We can kind of, as we see things, we can make determinations. But we're talking about things like real stirrups, where you can see sanitary socks. We're talking glasses of any sort, whether they be flip down, science teacher things, anything like that. Eye black, mustaches. We love mustaches. And especially if they're like a Keith Hernandez, Wade Boggs. Not only will you get an extra 10th of a point, you'll get a bonus 10th of a point. So you can get up to 20. You can get up to 2/10 of a point of mustache money there. But if we see things like 2-1s, which we don't like, that's a minus of a point. If the person on the card won an award that year, Rookie of the Year, Cy Young, MVP, All-Star, or won a Gold Glove, that's a 0.5 point each. If there's Hall of Famer on the card, even if they're not in focus, that's a whole bonus point. If Ricky Henderson or Nolan Ryan show up, it doesn't matter who pulls them. Ricky shows up, I win that round. Nolan shows up, Mark, you win that round. Any pop culture references we can easily find, you get a 0.5 point for each of those, unless they appeared on Seinfeld, The Simpsons, or Sabrina the Teenage Witch, in which case you get a 0.5 point. And if they were suspended for anything or mentioned in the Mitchell Report during their career, that is a minus a 0.5 point. Now, Mark, we have got some cards that were sent to us by longtime listener, longtime trivia answerer, Andrew Harner.
Yes, Andrew, what a guy. This guy has been with us for years.
So he sent us some cards. So we're going to go ahead and because of the way that we do this, I don't know if they were in packs or not, but Mark has got them. He has shuffled them up. We don't want to shuffle them. They're baseball cards. They're very valuable. But we're going to go ahead and Mark, you've got the cards in front of you this week. So you got to tell me who we got.
So I've got 5 cards in my right hand, 5 in my left hand. You get to pick.
Which one do you usually take? You usually go right.
I usually go right.
Yeah, I'm going to take the right then.
Okay. So we're going to start. I guess I'm the home team.
Well, you get to determine if you want to go first or last because you got the cards.
Well, I'm going to be the home team since I'm doing this
week. All right,
week.
It's so hit me up with my hit me up with my first card.
So your first player, Graham Lloyd, for the Milwaukee Brewers.
I always think of Graham Lloyd as a Brewer and a Yankee, but I also know he's Australian.
He is Australian, yes.
And are these all of the same year?
Yeah, 94.
So Graham Lloyd, first of all, 10 years in the big leagues, 4 with the Brewers, 3 with the Yankees, and then time with Montreal, the Royals, the Mets, the Marlins, and the Blue Jays. 1994, his second year in the big leagues, he went 2-3 with a 5.17 ERA in 43 games, 47 innings pitched, 49 hits, 31 strikeouts, a 97 ERA plus, and that is good for a WAR of positive 0.2. Anything on this card going to help me out?
No. Let's see here. No, he's clean shaven and no glasses or anything like that. He's just a lefty and he's about to deliver a pitch. Actually, you know what, Jeff? I hate to tell you this, but we got 2-1s.
Gosh darn you, Graham Lloyd. I mentioned he's from Australia. He's from Geelong, which I know.
The pitching coach of the Melbourne Aces in the Australian League.
Got it. Yeah. Let's see. He was traded with Pat Listash to the Yankees for Bob Wickman and Gerald Williams. Bob Wickman, we just talked about a couple episodes ago because his missing finger from a farm accident, even though he's a modern player.
So many farm accidents that created impressive pitching.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also traded from the Yankees with Homer Bush and David Wells to Toronto for Roger Clemens. So he was involved in some big deals. Doesn't seem like there's anything else that's gonna help me there. So that's a positive 0.1 you got to beat.
Okay. Well, my card is pitcher for the Minnesota Twins. You may have heard of him. You may have heard of his son, Pat Mahomes.
I'm not. I don't know if this is gonna help you out a whole lot.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure.
Let's see, Pat Mahomes.
I don't get any football stats.
No. Well, I don't think his dad played football. So 11 years in the big leagues for Pat Mahomes, 5 with the Twins, 2 with the Mets, 2 with the Red Sox, and then Pittsburgh, Texas, and the Cubs. In 1994, he went 9-5 with a 4.73 ERA with the Twins. That is all as a starter. 120 innings pitched, 121 hits, 53 strikeouts, a 103 ERA plus, and that is good for a WAR of 1.8.
Ooh.
I think you're going to win that round.
One time when I was working in the clubhouse, Mahomes was on the mound. He got taken out in like the 7th inning, and he was in the clubhouse, and Mike Heath, who played for Tacoma at the time, said, hey, he grabs me, and he goes, hey, can you go grab Pat Mahomes and tell him I want to talk to him? So my radar is up already. I'm like, oh, great. This can't be good. And, you know, Mike Heath was a veteran, you know, a very well-respected veteran. He was one of those hard-nosed, tough players that would play through anything. He was playing through some injuries at the time. So I went over to Mr. Mahomes and I said, hey, Pat, Mike Heath would like to speak with you. So they met kind of on middle ground in between the clubhouses, and Heater just basically said, you know what, I'm out there hurting and you're telling me get in the box. That's not cool. You know, you don't say that to a guy when he's in pain and I'm, you know, I'm trying and you're saying, get in the box, let's go. He basically said, that's not cool. And Mahomes took exception to it and said, you know, basically forget you. And which raised the ire of Mr. Heath, and things got a little heated, and pretty soon I'm in between them. Why am I in between two professional athletes trying to stop them from fighting? But fortunately, other players came in and separated them. The clubhouse door was open the entire time, and there was a bunch of kids looking in. So I ran up and shut the door, and they separated these guys, and they went back to their clubhouses, and I thought, God, I have a weird job.
Well, if there was one person that's going to separate two major league players, it's you.
That's where I wanted to be, let me tell you.
All right, so you're up 1-0. Hit me with my next card.
All right, your next card is another left-handed pitcher for the Dodgers, Omar Dahl.
Oh, I remember Omar.
That's D-A-A-L.
Yeah, I already got that typed in. I know how to spell Omar's name.
All right, just in case anybody didn't know.
Let's see, 11 years in the big leagues, 4 with the Dodgers, 3 with the Diamondbacks, and then Phillies, Montreal, Baltimore, and Toronto. 1994, his second year in the big leagues, he appeared in 24 games, no record, 3.29 ERA, 13 innings, 12 hits, 9 strikeouts, 123 ERA plus, and that is a WAR of 0.3. Let's see, anything on the card going to help me out?
I'm looking. I honestly can't tell. I think they're real stirrups, though. Oh, yeah, wow. I'm pretty sure they're real stirrups.
I like that. That's a good tenth of a point. Let's see, in his big league career, he hit 2 home runs as a pitcher.
Oh, wow.
One of which might have been a grand slam. In 2002 with the Dodgers, he had 1 home run and 4 RBI. So maybe he had 6 hits that year. So I don't want to call it a grand slam, but unless I get points for it, which I don't think I do. Once traded with Nelson Figueroa, Travis Lee, and Vicente Padilla, who hit Ricky Henderson once and made me mad, to the Phillies for Curt Schilling. So obviously had some value there. I don't see anything else really that's going to help me out there. Never appeared on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, oddly enough.
Which is weird. But
all right, so that's a 0.4 for Omar.
0.4, my card. It's a battle of left-handed pitchers. Tom Urbani from the St. Louis Cardinals.
And Omar didn't have a mustache or a beard at all?
You really can't tell from this card. His right arm with the glove on it is up, kind of covering his face.
Okay. All right, so well,
it might not even be him for all we know.
Tom Urbani, Santa Cruz native. That's where my grandparents lived.
Well, there you go.
Let's see. Overall, 4 years in the big leagues, parts of those 4 years with St. Louis and then a little bit with Detroit. 1994, he went 3-7 with a 5.15 ERA, 80 innings, pitched 98 hits, 43 strikeouts, and 81 ERA plus. And that is good for a minus 0.4 WAR. Anything going to help you on that card?
Absolutely nothing. No, a starting pitcher for the Italian national baseball team in the 1999 European Baseball Championships.
Oh, nice.
And he helped lead Italy to the silver medal and a berth in the 2000 Olympics.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. Worked as a mortgage broker in Santa Cruz. So maybe he's still a mortgage broker and you can buy a house.
He passed away in 2022. So
he's not a mortgage broker anymore.
Now, this is an interesting note. And why this is in here, I don't know. It's Wikipedia, but it says during his career, Urbani bought a house in Carson City, Nevada, on the recommendation of Donovan Osborne, a teammate and Carson City native. That's it.
Okay.
Very interesting.
Good.
All right. Well, good news for me. I'm going to win that round. It's 1-1. Let's go to the next one.
All right. You might have a shot here. This is, it's later in his career. Another left-handed pitcher.
Is there a theme here that we're supposed to be looking for?
I don't think so, because I do see some righties coming up. But for the Cleveland baseball team, Bud Black.
Oh, yeah. Bud Black. Manager Bud Black.
He is now.
Got to stress those management positions. Overall, though, 15 years he pitched in the big leagues. 7 with Kansas City, 4 with the Giants, 4 with Cleveland, and then Seattle and Toronto for a little bit. 1994, his second to last season, he was with the Giants, 37 years old, went 4-2 with a 4.47 ERA, 54 innings pitched, 50 hits, 28 strikeouts, and 89 ERA plus. And that will equal a WAR of 4.0.
Oh my gosh.
This is my card, right?
Yeah,
I like it. But how does Bud Black get a 4.0? Oh, wait, no. I was looking at 1989. 1994, a minus 0.1. That seems more along the lines of... No, we're going to go with the first thing. Let's see, won a ring with Royals in 1985. Yeah, he was a player to be named later when he went to the Mariners, sent him to the Royals.
Okay.
Anything on the card going to help me out? Hopefully, anything?
You know, unfortunately, he's got 2-1s.
Yes.
And you can tell because the stirrup stops on the sock before you get to the shoe.
That is the worst look. That's what I hate the most about these things is why didn't they just sew them down underneath the foot? Then this whole thing, it might not even be a fine. Do we need to talk to Kent Herbeck about this?
Probably.
Gosh darn it.
Yes. Okay. Well, you know, so that, what does that take you to, zero?
Well, no, that's a minus 0.2.
Minus 0.2. Okay. Yeah. My card is a righty for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Blaz Minor.
Oh, I remember that name.
We're getting to talk about some guys we haven't talked about before.
Yeah, so let's see.
Which was the point.
Well, yeah, I think that might be the point of this. 6 years in the big leagues for Blaz. 3 with the Bucks, 2 with the Mets, Seattle and Houston as well. 1994 with the Bucks, 0-1, 8.05 ERA. I might win with a minus 0.2.
Wow, man, no kidding.
19 innings pitched, 27 hits, 17 strikeouts, a 54 ERA plus, and that is good for a WAR of minus 0.8. Anything going to help you out on that card?
That's rough. No, nothing at all. No,
I like this.
You can't see the stirrups. No, clean shaven.
All right.
He is a righty, so we've broken the lefty.
Yeah. First round draft pick by the Phillies in 1986. He was traded by the Mets to the Mariners for Randy Vickers. That must have sent shockwaves throughout the Seattle community.
I remember that. It was like a day of mourning.
Yeah. Uncle of current player Dalton Jeffries.
Interesting.
All right. Well, I'm going to take that. That's a win. I'm up 2-1.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Next and card.
You've got a pretty good guy right here.
Okay.
And your next card is from the Texas Rangers pitcher, Kevin Brown.
All right. Now, are we going to be able to do the right Kevin Brown? No E at the end of the Brown, right?
No E, no, and 200 innings a year, Brown.
Yeah, all right. Yes. Well, yeah, this is the 19 years in the big leagues, Kevin Brown. 8 with the Rangers, 5 with the Dodgers, and then the Mets, Fish, Padres, and Orioles. 1994, kind of a down year for him, not going to lie. Let's see, with the Rangers, 7-9, 4.82 ERA, led the league in games started with 25. It was a strike-shortened year, of course. Also led the league in hits given up with 218, struck out 123, an ERA plus of exactly league average, 100. And that will be a WAR of 1.6. Anything on the card going to help me out?
No, it's kind of a cool card. Remember, this is 94 Tops, if you want to look it up. He's posing. I think he's in a turn back the clock uniform. Mm-hmm. And he's got his leg lifted up really high and his arm hung down like the pitchers of old.
A pose, or is that easy on the mound in the middle of the game?
No, it's a pose. It's out in right field.
Okay.
But it's a good pose. It's a good. Oh, he's got real stirrups on.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Well,
but it's turned back the clock. Glasses. Yeah. All right. So 1.7 first round draft pick by the Rangers. 4th overall in 1986. Let's see here. I don't. Hopefully no Mitchell report going on. Mitchell report. There it is. Darn it.
Well,
yeah, I figured he kind of seemed like the exact kind of guy that would be mentioned in the Mitchell report.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, he was the very first person in baseball to sign a $100 million contract.
Wow. I did not
know
that.
So 7 years, $105 million with the Dodgers in right before the 99 season.
Hmm. Also, since retiring, Brown has been involved in multiple handgun-related incidents. A neighbor reported he pulled out a gun during a dispute over yard debris, and he held 2 suspected male thieves at gunpoint until police arrived. I bet he's got to live in Texas still, right? Oh, no, Georgia. It says Georgia here.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, same vibe, I guess. All right, so with the Mitchell report, that's a 1.2 for me. Can you beat that?
Well, I've got a right-handed pitcher for the Pirates, John Hope. So I have no
your hope. Only hope here.
Yeah.
Let's see, John Hope. Overall, 4 years in the big leagues, all of it. He's a Pittsburgh Pirates lifer. So remember that when you get an immaculate grid that says Pirates and one team. John Hope, nobody is going to put John Hope. John Hope's mom's not going to put John Hope, so no, remember that one. Let's see, 1994, no record, 9 games, 5.79 ERA. Yeah, no hope. Overall, 76 ERA plus and a minus 0.4 WAR. I do not recall seeing him ever on Seinfeld, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, or The Simpsons. Is there anything
on that? Has the world's shortest Wikipedia page?
Well, does it say that in the Wikipedia page? That's right.
No, but one sentence.
Yeah. That makes for a quick one, and that'll bump me up. It's 3-1. I like this pack. Yeah. Andrew, looking out. Although you shuffled these, so.
Yeah. This is kind of funny on the back of the card. This, they were searching, just absolutely looking for anything to put on the card, obviously, because it says, John's hopes for a no-hitter were ruined on 9/16 when he had to leave a hitless game against Florida after four innings pitched.
Well, no hitter alert.
Four innings.
Wow. Well, maybe it was this, like the doubleheader in the minor leagues where it was only seven innings. So we're going to go with that.
They were searching.
They were really searching. All right. 3-1 on the scoreboard.
That wins it for you, but let's do the last card anyway.
Well, it's only 3-1. I got to win two more.
But there's only 10 cards.
Well, then I win automatically, right? Because if you win this round, it's 3-2.
Right. That's what I'm saying. You've got this one.
We are the champions, my friend.
But let's play this last card because I want to do a little research on your pitcher, Ricky Trilichek.
Oh, I was hoping it was Ricky Bitalico.
You were hoping it was Ricky.
Well, yeah, and I would think, oh, maybe, you know, Andrew's going to send in Ricky and Nolan.
Ricky Trilichek, one of the few ball players with three consonants to start his last name.
Herbeck,
yes. And Trilichek. That's in case you're wondering, T-R-L-I-C-E-K, Trilichek.
Let's see. Trilichek, 5 years in the big leagues, four teams in that 5 years. Mets, Red Sox, Dodgers, and Blue Jays. 1994 with Boston, he went 1-1 with an 8.06 ERA. Let's see, a lot of hits and not as many innings. Only seven strikeouts in 22 innings. A 63 ERA plus. And that is good for a WAR of -0.4. Anything on that card gonna help me get out of that minus?
You know, everybody in this is clean shaven. No, and you can't
maybe,
see his stirrups.
Maybe that's the theme.
That's it. The clean shaven guys.
Hey, he was traded for Ernie Witt once.
Oh, that's interesting.
And let's see here. Does he actually have a Sabre bio? He has a Sabre bio.
Oh, wow.
He never married. Lives on an 85-acre property in LaGrange. I don't know where that is. Enjoys hunting and fishing, just like Ricky Henderson.
It's like every baseball player.
Yeah. That used to be the staple on the back of baseball cards, hunting and fishing.
I got a shot at winning. I mean, it's a pointless round, but I've got a shot with my first baseman outfielder for the Tigers, Skeeter Barnes.
Oh, wow. There is a name I have not heard in a long time.
Yeah, this is a good one. I like this.
Skeeter Barnes and Pokey Reese, two great names that go great together. Let's see. Skeeter Barnes, overall, 9 years in the big leagues. Had a pretty decent career. Four with the Tigers, three with the Reds. Montreal and St. Louis in there as well. 1994 was his final year. He played till he was 37.
Wow.
Let's see, with the Tigers that final year, only appeared in 24 games, 286 average, 286 on base, so he did not walk at all or get hit by a pitch ever or reach via catcher's interference. Let's see, one home run for, this is our first batter, right? Everybody else has been a pitcher.
Yes, correct.
Wow, okay. Four RBI overall and 82 OPS plus, -0.1.
He's got real stirrups, though.
All right, so that's a zero.
And some eye black.
That's a positive tenth of a point. He was traded for Max Venable at one point, as well as he was traded for Speaker of the House Tom Foley, along with Dan Schatzschneider, who was involved in every single transaction in the 80s.
Yes, this is true. Here's something on the back of his card. In 1990, Skeeter became the all-time hit leader of AAA Nashville, breaking the record of Yankee manager Buck Showalter.
That you never really want to hold a record of the most for any team in the minor leaguers. Sometimes he was called Crash Davis because he spent a lot of time in the minor leagues.
He didn't come up till he was 28 or something.
Let's see. Yeah, his rookie year, he was 26.
Okay.
But then if we look at his minor league stats here, I'm going to guess this is going to be a roadmap type situation. Oh, wow. Yeah, he played a lot in the minor leagues. 15 seasons overall in the minor leagues and had Wow. Let's see. In the majors, he had 675 plate appearances. In the minors, he had 5,345 plate appearances.
Wow.
Played 12 parts of 12 seasons in AAA baseball. I think he was just an insurance. He's one of those guys that, okay, he is definitely not a superstar. He is your league average. He's your war guy, right? Because war is the average replacement is a minor leaguer that would be called up to replace a major leaguer. I think Skeeter Barnes is the poster boy for war.
Yeah, I agree.
Wow.
Here's something interesting. As of 2020, he's the only player to be hit by more than one pitch in his debut. So his first game in the big leagues, he got hit by a pitch twice.
Interesting. Career WAR in the big leagues, 1.1. So if it was 0.0, then I would make the case that he is absolutely the poster child for WAR. But
yes,
he's a little bit better. A
little bit better than that.
And his positions played look like a phone number. He played everywhere, except for he didn't pitch. Never pitched.
Let's see. In the minor leagues, Barnes batted .296 for his career and had 1,773 career hits.
Good for him. All right. Is that it then?
That's it. Skeeter Barnes rounds it off. And
all right.
And,
I'll take the W. I like it.
Congratulations.
And Andrew Harner, thank you once again for the cards. That's cool. If anybody wants to curate some packs with cards with players that maybe we have not talked about or that you want us to talk about, know that we're going to shuffle them up. So don't have to try and stack. I know everybody's going to send it in and say, this is Jeff's pack because we want him to win because he is our favorite. We love Jeff and we want to spite Mark. But you don't have to do that because we're going to shuffle them up. And if you put a Ricky in there, I'm going to win anyway. So
that's a good point. Yeah. So you could put a Ricky and a Nolan and hope they go up against each other in the battle of the titans of.
Or you could just put all Rickies. If you want to send just an all Ricky pack, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, including a rookie card, please.
Oh, graded only, though. If you're just going to send us
yes,
one.
Yes, a graded rookie.
It's got to be graded. All right. So again, thank you, Andrew Harner. And thank everybody for listening. That's going to do it for Wax Packs Heroes. Also going to do it for this episode. Big one coming up next week, 250. If you want more of us, though, you can find us all over the social medias. If you want to know, can Ricky Henderson be used in today's Immaculate Grid? All you have to do is go to our Twitter, because I tell you every day. You can find us at Two Strike Noise, that is at TWO Strike Noise on all the socials. Also, all that's in the show notes, including our email address, Mark.
Yes, Two Strike Noise, spell it out, TWO Strike Noise at gmail.com.
We cannot wait to hear from you, and if you want to send us some cards, just hit us up there and we'll tell you how to get it to us. And we appreciate it. We appreciate everybody listening. And we will see you next week on the next episode of Two Strike Noise.
Thank you. God bless you. Have a great day.
So treat her right. M is for the moan and the miserable groan from the pain that she felt when I was born. O is for the oven with its burning heat, where she stood making sure I had something to eat. T is for the time that she stayed up night and took my temperature when I wasn't feeling right. H is for the hard-earned money she spent to keep clothes on my back and try to pay the rent. E is every wrinkle I put on her face and every worry that I caused when I stayed out late. The last letter R is that she taught me respect, and for the room up in heaven that I know she'll get. Mother, there is no other like mother, so treat her right. Love her, my mother. So treat her right, treat her right.
Treat her right, treat your mother right. Treat her right, treat her right.
My mother, so treat her right.